Hi friends, I'm Niamh and this is the Dark Emerald Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Now, this episode will contain mentions of suicide and gun violence, just as a little trigger warning. And this case takes place in 2019, so it's a bit more modern. And it centres around the breakdown of a quiet farming family because of a massive inheritance dispute. I followed this case along as it was unfolding in complete disbelief at how strange this whole series of events was. It made so little sense to me because this whole dispute over a will resulted in so much greed, jealousy, hatred, and the deaths of three people in one family. So the O'Sullivan family, they lived on an isolated farm property near Asolas outside Kenturk in County Cork. The father, his name was Timothy, he was better known as Tig, and that's what I'll refer to him as throughout this story. Tig O'Sullivan, he was aged 59. The mother, Anne, she was 61. And their two sons, Mark, aged 26, and Diarmaid, aged 22. Now, there isn't a whole lot of public information about the family before this whole situation itself, because they were pretty private people and they didn't have a history of crime or any domestic events until this whole situation arose that we know of. And from what I read in local news articles, they were a well-known family and they were very well liked. Anne, who was the mother, she grew up in Asolas and she was a very well-respected nurse. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2012, and that was back when her and her husband Tig were still on good terms with each other. Tig grew up near Lombardstown, and he was a well-respected man in the local community, and he had worked for 40 years in the motor industry and was working in a Charleville car garage around this time. Now, both of the boys went to college, and they both had very promising futures. Mark graduated from University College Cork in 2019 with a master's degree in business law, and he also received a bachelor's degree from the University of Limerick. He was very involved in student life at UL and spent a year on Erasmus in Athens, where he learned how to speak Greek. Diarmaid was in fact only a week away from receiving a first class honours degree in accounting from the Cork Institute of Technology, and he worked at Burton's Hardware in Kanturk when this whole thing happened. Anne was very proud of both of her son's achievements. Now, both Anne and her husband Tig were landowners. The 115-acre farm that they lived on belonged to Anne, and it was bequeathed to her by her mother in 2013. Tig had his own land in Cecilstown in County Cork that he was given to by his own family. So according to Anne, this land was kind of always kept separate from the other properties. They never talked as a couple of becoming co-owners of each other's properties. And in the past, that was never an issue between her and her husband. But all of that was soon to change when Anne was diagnosed with terminal cancer in February of 2020. Now, it seems like there was a bit of a division in the family already. Anne and Mark were very alike and very close. Tig and Diarmaid, they were very alike. They were very loyal to each other. But after this terminal cancer diagnosis, all the cracks in the family began to show. And Diarmaid was distancing himself from his mother, and both he and his father were becoming very openly critical of Mark. Tig began pressuring his wife to kind of get her business affairs in order, and by May, Tig and Diarmaid were putting heavy pressure on Anne to settle her will. She said that they both had been calling her lazy and indecisive, and that Tig had upset her because he said that she was basically like a lazy cow stuck in a ditch that wouldn't move, all because of this will. Like, could you imagine comparing your wife or mother, anyone you cared about, who has terminal cancer, to a lazy cow? So Anne began discussing the distribution of the land with her son Mark. She wanted the distribution of her land to be 50-50 to both sons. But by July, Diarmaid was pressuring his mother again, telling her how he thought that she should split up her property. According to Anne herself, quote, he said Mark could take the house and the yard. Mark could also have the moorland that would accumulate over 30 acres. Diarmaid said he was the one who deserves the rest of the land. Now remember, Anne's property is on 115 acres of land. At the time, that was worth about 2 million euro. So Diarmaid wanted 85 acres and to only leave his brother with 30. Now, I don't know the value of their house on the farm, but it definitely wouldn't amount to the huge difference in size between the two plots. Not to mention, Diarmaid was also going to be inheriting all of his father's property in Cecilstown. So Anne had said to him, no, she reiterated she wanted the distribution of her property to be as equal as possible, because she knew that Diarmaid was going to inherit all of his dad's property, so she wanted to make sure that Mark got a special provision in her will. But this set Diarmaid off. He believed that Mark was lazy and didn't deserve the land. And he also threatened his mother, saying that she had a week to decide or there would be consequences. And to make it worse in all this whole crazy argument, Tighe took Diarmaid's side. Tighe and Diarmaid warned her, if she didn't fix things in the will the way they wanted them done, she would follow, quote, two coffins to a cemetery, threatening her that basically if Diarmaid didn't get what he wanted, they would kill somebody. Now, Diarmaid began reading through his mother's mail, and he was becoming increasingly more and more pissed off with Mark, calling him a rat, calling him a snake. What I don't get is why Diarmaid felt so entitled to everything. Why did he act like his brother was betraying him or sneaking behind his back? Like, nothing like that was happening, but clearly it was all in his head. So at this point, Anne was becoming more and more intimidated by her husband and her younger son. She wrote her will in September, dividing everything as fairly as possible, and she never spoke to Diarmaid and Tighe about her will or its contents, which I'm sure they were furious about. Now, I saw it described in two different ways, but either Anne was undergoing an operation or she was undergoing some sort of treatment for her cancer in Dublin. After this happened in Dublin, she and Mark moved in with their cousins, the Sherlock family, on October 12th, rather than going back to her home to the farm to recover, which says a lot to me because after having a serious medical ordeal or treatment, she didn't want to go back home to the farm with Tighe and Diarmaid. Just tells you, it was not a happy place to be. Now, Mark was very devoted and loving to his mother, and he cared for her while she was unwell. I just feel so sorry for them because Anne was just having treatment. She's terminally ill, and they're both being tormented by the other two people in their family. It was during this stay that Anne's cousin Louise Sherlock went so far to go to the police station in Kanturk to report her concerns over Anne and Mark's safety. Now, the police advised her that Anne herself should make a statement, but it seemed like there wasn't very much they could do at this point since they weren't in any immediate danger. Now, when Louise testified later at the Mallow Coroner's Court investigation, she said that in the weeks leading up to the shocking homicide, that Tighe had told her that, quote, this would all be over in a couple of weeks, and that there would be a street of slaughter. Now, I'm sorry, but that sounds like a very threatening situation if you ask me, and rightly so. Mark was becoming more and more afraid for his and his mother's lives. I think his mother was hopeful that things could work out between all of them, but I think Mark wasn't as hopeful. I think he knew that things were going to take a dark turn, because he cleverly wrote a letter and hid it in his mother's medicine bag to be found in the likelihood that he or his mother were harmed. Now, this letter is incredibly telling of just how abusive and crazy his brother and father were being. In the letter, in that hidden letter, Mark said he felt like, quote, a caged animal constantly being pushed by two abusive kidnappers. He said that Tighe and Diarmaid had vowed to leave a trail of destruction. And Mark goes on to write, quote, I no longer feel safe in my home. My own safety and that of my mother are in danger. Raheen has always been my home, and I am very concerned that it is no longer a safe haven. The stress caused by my brother and Tighe is becoming unbearable. There have been several incidents in the past few months where the two verbally assaulted me and my mother, such that my brother said, give him the farm or he would commit suicide, which Tighe talked him into. Quote. Mark then said his father said he would kill himself if Diarmaid didn't get what he wanted. Mark said he felt mentally and physically drained with fear, that the two of them are getting more and more desperate, and he feared that it would become physical. He said that Diarmaid had once again threatened to leave a trail of destruction behind and that the lights would never be on in Raheen again, which is so haunting. It's clear at this point, Diarmaid and Tighe had outwardly spoken about some kind of suicide pact with each other. We don't know whose idea it was, according to Mark, he believed it was his father's suggestion that they both commit suicide, which over a piece of land just seems so wild and ridiculous. Now, while staying at the Sherlock's, Mark wrote to his friend Clara over Facebook Messenger that he was afraid that his brother and his father would kill him and make it look like a suicide, which was also very clever of him. You know, he told her he even slept at the foot of his mother's bed for two nights at their home because he was so worried for her safety. Clara testified that Diarmaid and his father wanted everything to go to him and nothing to go to Mark. She also said, quote, he asked me if his body would be found, that I would go to the guards with the message he sent to show that it wasn't a suicide. Now, 2 weeks went by, and Diarmaid and Tighe refused to speak to Anne over the phone while they were staying at the Sherlock's. So instead, she sent them a letter through her lawyer to try and reconcile the situation. I'm sure all she wanted was to repair things between her husband and her two sons, because let's not forget, she knows she's dying. Nobody wants to pass away with their family in a shambles like this. And so with that in mind, on October 25th, Anne and Mark leave the Sherlock's house and return home to the farm to try and reconcile things with Tighe and Diarmaid. They had no idea that only a day later, Tighe and Diarmaid would put their plan in place and three of them would be dead. When Anne and Mark arrived home, she immediately noticed the tension and the coldness from her husband. The next morning, on the 26th of October, Anne heard movement around the house at around 6 a.m. She woke up sometime later to the sound of a gunshot at 6:40. Anne immediately put on her dressing gown and shoes. She left her bedroom to see Tighe and Diarmaid with guns, and Mark was laying on the floor against his bed and locker. Blood was coming out of his mouth. His legs were covered and he was lifeless. She told him to hold on, that she was going to go get help. But now, this is late October in Ireland. It's still going to be dark outside. It's probably freezing, and poor Anne has just seen her son be shot. She runs down the stairs, and that's when she realizes her husband and other son have smashed all the phones in the house, so she can't call anyone to raise the alarm or even get an ambulance for Mark. She also doesn't know if they're going to come back to shoot her too, so Anne runs outside to the front gate to get out of the farm. But she sees someone has put a brand new and much bigger lock on the gate, meaning she can't unlock it. So Anne has to go through some kind of a trench or a ditch to get off the property. And she runs to the neighbor's house, which is 15 minutes away, to get help. By 7:10, the Gardaí are making their way to the property with armed support and the emergency response unit was being flown in by helicopter. Now, just as an aside, I didn't know much about the ERU, but basically they're the Irish version of a SWAT team. The Garda ERU provides the highest tier of firearms response to Irish law enforcement, specialising in weapons tactics, counter-terrorism, execution of high-risk missions, crisis negotiation, hostage rescue and close protection. So clearly, the authorities didn't know what kind of threat the two O'Sullivan men were, but they weren't taking any chances. They knew they were both armed. And so they launched a large-scale operation, even closing off all access roads for 1 kilometre around the farm property. They had search dogs and they also had paramedics on standby. For the next 4 hours, the ERU tried to make contact with anyone in the house and fail. By 1 p.m, the ERU carefully make their way into the house and find Mark dead upstairs from gunshot wounds, but no one else was in the house. Now they have to launch a full-scale manhunt for Tighe and Diarmaid, who they both know are armed and dangerous. But only 40 minutes later, the Garda helicopter finds 2 more bodies in a nearby field about 600 metres from the house. This was Tighe and Diarmaid. The deputy state pathologist, Dr. Margaret Bolster, who performed their autopsies on all 3 men, said that Mark had suffered a traumatic brain injury and died quickly from his injuries. She stated that the bedroom where Mark died had splattered blood on the duvet and the drawer. She said the wounds indicated that he raised his arms to protect himself and that he had gunshot wounds to his chest, head and arm. The Gardaí recovered 3 legally held firearms from the various scenes involved, 2 rifles and a shotgun, as well as a number of cartridges. Diarmaid and Tighe each died from a single self-inflicted gunshot wound. They were both shot in the mouth, with forensics suggesting that Diarmaid shot himself first, and then his father did the same. They had found a 12-page handwritten letter to Anne strapped around Diarmaid's thigh with plastic wrap. Now, the contents of this letter have never been fully disclosed, but we do know a page and a half of those 12 pages was written by Tighe, and a source said the letter was well scripted and well written. It showed that what had happened was premeditated and planned, and it was executed by the father and son in partnership. It was most likely led by Diarmaid, but the father was obviously in on the whole thing. And, you know, I think the purpose of the letter was kind of only to hurt Anne further. It was definitely a murder-suicide pact from the start. But it just shows how crazy this whole situation got. That all this happened, this division happened because of land. From the way the two had been acting and the cruel things that they had been saying to Anne and Mark in the lead up to all of this, it's probably safe to say that this letter was probably brutal, hence why it has never been released publicly. I think from everything I've read in this case, from everything that I can tell, Tighe and Diarmaid had no intention of ever reconciling with Anne and Mark, and that they only said that as an olive branch to lure them away from the Sherlocks and to get them all back to the family farm to murder Mark. I don't know if either Diarmaid or his father were, or their father were dealing with any kind of mental illness at the time. Nothing was mentioned about that. But both of them were functioning very normally outside of the home in their jobs and everyday lives. Diarmaid carefully wrote that 12-page letter to his mother. And, you know, it must have taken a long time to write 12 pages by hand. This wasn't done impulsively or in the heat of the moment. He knew what he wanted to do. He shot Mark multiple times. He wanted Mark to die. Then they smashed all the phones in the house to make sure no one could call for help. And they replaced the old lock on the gate with a bigger, newer one to make it harder for anyone to escape or get into the farm to help. I think they wanted to make sure that Anne would suffer and that she was the only survivor, because they had every opportunity to shoot her the same way they did to Mark, but instead they chose to let her live and to suffer with the terrible things that they had done, because they blamed her for everything. They knew that her cancer was killing her, and they wanted her to die alone to punish her for not giving in to their demands. Now, Tadhg and Diarmaid had a joint funeral that was separate from Mark's funeral, and somehow Anne found the strength to attend both services. At the time that he died, Mark had been studying to become a solicitor and was known for his love of sports and travel. Over 1,200 people left messages in Mark's book of condolences, and people described him as a gentleman who would always hold the door open for someone. One person wrote, "Mark, your kindness, gentle nature and beautiful smile will leave a lasting impression forever." And another wrote, "I remember his big cheeky smile. Never did he complain about homework, unlike me. He was a gentleman." Multiple friends described how he made their lives better for being in it. He had been very involved in his college life and made lots of friends around Ireland and beyond, but sadly some of them were unable to travel to his funeral due to COVID restrictions. The bond between Anne and Mark was described as being the greatest son a mother could have, which just broke my heart, because all he wanted was to care for and protect his mother. Tragically, Anne passed away 6 months later on the 7th of April 2020. She was remembered at her funeral as a person of immense courage and dignity. Her cousin Louise Sherlock said, "When I think of Anne, there are a few words that immediately come to mind: gentle, caring, quiet, kind, unselfish, sincere, and compassionate." She said, "Anne showed nothing but kindness to her family, her friends, and her neighbours. We all share a myriad of happy memories down through the years. We hope that Anne is now at peace." Father Toby Blewett, who led the service, said, "Darkness came into Anne's life when she lost her family in a very sad and tragic circumstance, and when she lost her battle with the illness she had fought so courageously. We have an added sadness, I think, that for Anne, for one family, life didn't work out the way it might have." And that's the end of today's case. I really hope that both Anne and Mark are at peace. They seem like wonderful people, and neither of them should have gone through what they did. If you'd like to see any of the interesting images I found while researching this case, please follow along to my Instagram account at Dark Emerald Podcast. Feel free to like, share, send me a message. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the case. Bye.